This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents The Light of Life, Book 4 of The Cycle of Galand, written by Edward W. Robertson, performed by Tim Gerard Reynolds. One. Dante clasped hands with his foe, ears ringing with the beat of his heart. On the white, bone-like surface of the ground, Gladick gazed up at him, eyes shining with tears. Beside Dante, Naren looked thunderstruck, and Volo looked ill. But Blazer's shock was already being replaced by understanding. And condemnation. Gladick tilted his weathered face to the clouds, as if seeking the gods behind them. He held the stump of his right arm close to his chest. Dante tightened his arm and helped the old man to his feet.
"I want nothing more than to leave this life and step into the beyond."
Gladick's voice was husky, as if he was announcing the death of a dear friend.
"Even so, I will help you fight what has been unleashed, but I believe our fight will be in vain."
Dante tried to smile, but his mouth wouldn't do more than twitch.
"You'd be surprised how much you can accomplish when you don't know that you're supposed to be able to do it." "This belief explains much about your behavior."
"I'm sorry." Naren's reddened face swiveled between them. "I don't understand what is happening."
"That's because you're in possession of a working sense of right and wrong," Blaze said. "What's happening is that Dante is proposing an alliance. With Gladick. Not Gladick of Yorton, friendly baker, but this Gladick, the most unfriendly butcher."
This left Naren too flummoxed to speak. Spears of guilt ran up Dante's spine.
"You don't know what you're talking about."
Blaze snorted.
"You're doing that thing where you throw away every principle you've ever had because you think it'll provide you the slightest advantage in getting what you want."
"We've stumbled into something we don't understand. We can't afford to make rash decisions right now."
"And the decision to befriend a mass-murdering lunatic is reasoned and logical?"
"You saw what we fought back there. He was trying to destroy it, and we stopped him. He being the same person who has also repeatedly tried to destroy our allies from existing. Based on Gladick's history of judgment, he was probably trying to stop that big fellow back there from declaring world peace."
"You are more correct than you know," Gladick said. "But this world peace would be the peace of eternal slavery."
Blaze turned on him with the full fury of his scorn.
"He's going to enslave us all, is he? Then why have you spent the last year trying to colonize the plagued islands and exterminate the Cullen Basin, driven mad by the impending end of the world, no doubt?"
"It was thought that the Aedan Rane remained in his prison. Unbeknownst to my former ally, the Drakebane, who ruled these lands, the rebels of Tanaratane have been working to release him, so that he might destroy the Drakebane for them."
"This is exactly why we need his help."
Dante glanced in the direction where they'd fled from the being Gladick called the Aedan Rane, the White Lich. But the ghoulish landscape was currently empty.
"He knows a whole hell of a lot that we don't. Fire destroys, but it can also illuminate. We need to see what it can show us."
"Right." Blaze swung back toward Gladick. "Where did you come by all this knowledge? Reading books? Speaking to people?"
The cadaverous man nodded. "In large part."
"Excellent. Then we will also go read these books and speak to these people, freeing us up to kill you now."
"As you wish." "We came here expecting to kill him," Dante said. "So to you, any action that doesn't involve killing him
is the most foolish act since the last time you forgot to eat breakfast. But new information has come to light. Information that changes everything. Our plans have to change with it. Let me give it some thought. Blaze wrapped his hand around the hilt of his sword. On closer consideration, I'm pretty sure it's still a great idea.
If we slay him now, we have no idea how long it'll take to learn about the Aedan Rane. Because, whatever it is, the Drakebane's last act here was to try to destroy it, and when that failed, he was so terrified of it that he's abandoning his homeland altogether.
Blazer's sword arm relaxed, the tension moving from it to his face. As he made a rare struggle for words, Naren surged forward, shoving Gladdock to the ground. The priest attempted to catch himself with his right arm. The impact of his stump against the stony surface made him gasp. Naren drew his saber and jabbed it into the hollow of Gladdock's throat.
You murdered my captain, my oldest friend, my savior. In return, I send you to the tilted cabin that rests at the bottom of the sea.
Make it quick.
Gladdock's gaze had shifted past Naren to the south.
After, you will want to run.
Dante wrenched his eyes away from the unfolding execution and to the southern horizon, beyond which they'd last seen the White Lich. There, a pair of dark shapes loped swiftly through the upthrust field of bony growths. The creatures had the length and height of wolves, but they were as slender as ferrets and as graceful as Galadhi's fishing cats. Dante's mouth dried out.
What are those?
His scouts, Gladdock said, although such a term understates their danger. They are more than a match for your armed men, and their skin is hardened against the blades of the Odosain.
Thanks for the warning, Blaze said. Got a boat we can use while you stay here and bravely hold them off?
Yes. It is beyond the labyrinth.
Perfect. Don't worry, we'll definitely send help.
The labyrinth?
Dante grabbed the priest's intact arm.
I don't know why you're willing to help us after everything that's happened, but if you want us to get out of here, then show us the way.
Again, Gladdock looked up at the clouds. A look of deep yearning creased the corners of his eyes. Coming from any other priest, Dante would have assumed he was beseeching the gods for aid, but he felt abruptly certain that Gladdock was wishing to die.
Gladdock's shoulders sank.
As you wish.
He loped forward, moving easily despite the grievous wound that had claimed his right arm. Naren bared his teeth and followed. Blaze spewed profanity. Volo, normally as free with her opinions as a crow, ran along as if in a trance, still stunned by the understanding of what her rebel movement had done in releasing the Aedan Rane. Dante held the rear, keeping one eye on the creatures as they pursued the five of them across the field of white spikes and red pools. He had utterly exhausted himself in the battle against the White Lich. The others were battered themselves, and Gladdock had just said the animal scouts were hardened against the nether-fueled Odosain blades they carried. There would be no more arguments between them, not until they were out of this place and into safety, or whatever passed for it these days. Gladdock weaved through a field of rocky protrusions, streaked with iron rust. Beyond the next ridge, the ground leveled out in a plateau, standing 100 feet above the swamps below. Gusts of wind snapped at their clothes. A blank wall of rock rose from the end of the plateau, broken by a single opening just large enough for a single person to squeeze through. If Dante had any power remaining, he might have etched a staircase 20 feet up to the top of the short cliff, but as it was, there was no way forward but through the door. Outside it, Gladdock opened his palm and whispered to himself. pure white light blossomed from his grasp. He entered, and the others followed. Inside, their breathing echoed from the tight tunnel walls. It smelled damp, shot through with the scent of aquatic life and lingering decay. The tunnel forked. Gladick glanced down each branch before continuing to the left. He'd hardly gotten 10 feet before the labyrinth forked again. This time, the priest continued to the right, hardly breaking stride.
"You have this memorized?" Dante said.
Gladick shook his white-haired head. At the next branch he came to a stop.
"Look into the nether. Where you find it, go the opposite."
"Why? Because you think it's a sign of evil?"
"Because down that path, things have died."
The priest moved onward into the gloom, sandals scattering a pile of small bones.
"The Drakebane betrayed me. He and his people will have departed, taking their boats with them. Yet we hid another canoe for just such a situation as ours. If it remains, you may employ it."
Blaze grunted.
"How gracious of you to bravely use us to save your own skin."
"Just as you always have, you mistake me. This is not about my own life.
So, after devoting your golden years to murdering heretics, your enemies, and especially us, you suddenly want to save our skins?"
"Correct. For I believe you are the only ones who might slow the White Lich's progress."
"Slow him? Don't you mean stop him?"
Gladick made a creaking noise that might have been a laugh.
"You scatter words like bait on the surface of a lake, but I use each one as I mean it. To slow him is the best that you can hope."
Blaze was quiet for a moment.
"If you don't think we can kill him, then what's the point?"
"To allow the world a few more months of innocence before it is consumed."
At the next intersection, Gladick took the right path, only to stop a few feet into it, murmur something under his breath, and backtrack. Down a side tunnel, Dante thought he heard breathing in the darkness. He told himself it was merely an echo. Light shined ahead. After the black halls of the labyrinth, it burned like white-hot metal, yet it was nothing more than the overcast sunlight of the day. They stopped outside the exit to let their eyes adjust. The land before them ramped down to the rust-colored waters of the deepest swamp. At the boundary, a large canoe waited beside the white bank.
"That is my vessel," Gladick said.
Blaze strode forward.
"I don't care if it's the boat waiting to ferry Lyle's blessed ghost up to double heaven. We're taking it."
As elsewhere, in the wound, the ground was scattered with spindly, tree-like white structures, ranging from 2 to 8 feet tall. Before, Dante had taken them for a bizarre form of stalagmite. After hearing Gladick's claim about the overflow of nether in the wound, however, it looked as though the earth was sprouting bones. These provided decent cover, yet the way ahead looked quiet and clear. Dante jogged after Blaze. Halfway toward the boat, two shadows darted along the shore, far too agile for their size. Long claws sent grit scattering across the ground. The creatures came to a stop, directly in front of the canoe. Both had the height of a full-grown wolf, perhaps closer to that of a mule, but now that they were closer, Dante saw why they had appeared so slender. Rather than animals of living flesh, the two creatures were made of naked bone, the same as when he reanimated a rat to scout for him. Rather than being white or yellowed, these bones were black. He reached toward them with his mind. "They've been reinforced somehow, like the swamp dragons. They'll be toughened against our swords." Blaze drew his Odorsaine blades. purple-black nether shot along their lengths, swirling like lightning.
Bad move on their part. That only means it'll hurt more.
The Aedan Bane has forged these animals into weapons, Gladick said. Don't let arrogance blind you to their danger.
Blaze rolled his eyes and advanced, angling to the right of the two undead beasts that were cutting them off from the canoe.
Dante drew his sword, jerking at the twitch from deep inside his spine.
Nether flowed along the steel. He moved to Blaze's left flank. Wordlessly, Naren unsheathed the sword he'd looted out of one of the fallen knights and closed ranks.
Look out!
Volo pointed uphill. There, two more of the creatures had appeared on the ridge. They held position, as still as statues, before springing downhill with frightening speed.
Quickly now! Blaze bent his knees. Before they catch us in the back!
He charged the nearer of the first pair of animals. It skipped to its right. Dante pressed forward, driving it back toward Blaze.
Naren cried out, throwing himself toward Dante.
Dante had only turned his back to the other beast for the briefest moment, but it had closed the distance between them with a single bound. Naren smacked into his side, driving him to the ground the instant before the animal soared over him. It reached for him with its scything claws, inches away. At the shore, Blaze swiped at the first of the creatures with both swords. It dodged most of his attacks like it was made of smoke. The few strikes that connected made a dull thwacking noise. Volo stuck close to Gladick, brandishing her short, heavy-handled dagger. From her posture, she seemed to understand it would do little good against the bony monsters. Stiff from their battle with the White Lich, Dante shoved himself to his feet. The beast that had flung itself at him had already come about and was lashing at Naren with its claws, skipping from side to side with the twitchiness of a wasp. Naren shuffled forward and took a backhand swipe at its neck. The creature tucked its front paws beneath it, the sword chipping into its shoulder blade as it rolled toward him. As soon as it got its feet beneath it, it exploded toward Naren. The captain fell back, hacking at the animal's face and landing a glancing blow on its bony cheek, sending up a puff of bone powder. The creature sailed forward, plowing into Naren's shoulder. He collapsed under its unholy strength. Dante was already charging forward, slamming his nether-wrapped blade into the beast's springy, naked spine. The blow landed with a dry crack, jolting up Dante's arm. A black chip spun away. The undead creature lashed out at Dante, claws gouging his forearm, and bounded backward. Naren hauled himself to his feet. He was bleeding from three parallel slashes across his left shoulder.
Are we so much as hurting them?
Try for their joints, Dante said. They don't bleed, but we can whittle them down.
Dazzling light spewed to his left. Gladick faced down both of the animals that were charging from uphill, blasting them with streams of ether like symmetrical storms of lightning. Shadows steamed and sizzled away from the creature's bones, but still they ran on, leaping from rock to rock. Gladick stood firm, sheltering Volo behind him, showing no intention of trying to run. He didn't look scared, just a little bit sad, as if hearing of the death of an old lover he hadn't spoken to since he was young.
The ether flared so brightly, Dante had to shield his eyes.
The lead creature tossed its head and peeled to the side. The second dropped into a crouch and sprung, claws reaching for the old man.
Shadows swept to Gladick's hands. He planted his feet and sent a flood of nether coursing toward the oncoming monster.
It disappeared into a cloud of darkness, crying out with a metallic, trumpet-like squall.
Gladick dropped to the side, kneeling in his plain grey robe. The creature tumbled past him, emerging from the shadows, clawing out to all sides to try to arrest its skid. Sections of its black bone had been scoured white. An object bounced downhill toward Dante. It landed a few feet away. A severed, bony paw, claws gnarled tight. The ankle, however, was all wrong.
Rather than being slender, it was wide. Knobby. If anything, it looked like a vertebra.
Naren called out in defiance, blocking a swipe of a claw with his sword.
Dante ran to join him. They stood shoulder to shoulder, fending off one attack after another, but the creature was so quick they rarely had the chance to counter. To Dante's right, Blaze was holding his own against the other scout that had cut them off from the boat. Inch by inch, he pushed his opponent toward the shore, but other than a few white chips cut out from its bones, the construct had suffered little appreciable damage. Dante frowned, examining the one he and Naren were doing their best to contain. As a whole, its skeleton looked like no other animal he'd seen. But that was because no such creature existed. Rather, it had been forged from the bones of several different animals, the paws and claws of bears, the spine of some great cat, the strong snout and fangs of a massive wolf. As far as he knew, such a thing should be impossible. When he reanimated a dead creature, he could only do so because the nether in the animal was already in sympathy with every other part of itself. Cobbling together multiple pieces from other animals, even of the same species, shouldn't result in anything more than an inert jumble of bones. The beast drove forward, pushing him and Naren back in a frantic scrabble. Light and darkness shimmered where Gladik did battle with the other pair, but the energies were already dimming. Gladik had spent most of his powers fighting the White Lich. Soon, they'd be left with no sorcery whatsoever. As Dante and Naren battled the monster back, Dante examined its long, sinuous spine. The vertebrae in its ankle couldn't be a mere artistic quirk. Not when the netherial trace, the dark soul of the body, was contained somewhere within the spine, a fact Dante had only revealed during their trip to the battle at the Wound of the World. Physically, the creature's spine showed no signs of irregularity. Frowning, Dante delved into the nether. The shadows within its vertebrae seemed normal as well. After another exchange, the beast skipped back, favoring its front left paw. Naren pressed in on it, seeking to exploit their advantage. The beast tightened its fleshless jaws in something eerily like a smile, and reversed course toward Naren. He thrust forth his sword. It clipped through the animal's ribs, sending chips of bone to all sides as the whirling nether discharged itself, but the beast kept onward, clawing at Naren's arm. He cried out, and dropped his blade. Before Dante could close on them, the animal raised its other paw high into the air and smashed its claws down through Naren's chest. Naren collapsed in a gout of blood. The creature opened its jaws to crush the captain's skull. Dante hammered his blade into the side of its head, sending small cracks webbing from its eye socket. The animal whirled away. As it dashed past him, Dante offered a clumsy swipe at its backside. The strike wouldn't do more than annoy the creature. Yet it jerked its hips away as if he were about to plunge his weapon into its heart. As it flashed past, he got his first good look at its tail. Rather than being the typical streamlined extension of the spine that you saw in rats and dogs and so forth, the tailbones of the amalgamated beast were a short jumble of delicate bones that appeared taken from the ankles, feet, and toes.
"The tails!" Dante yelled. "Hit them in the tails!"
He sprinted after the retreating beast. It broke into a headlong run, opening ground between itself and him. Along the shore, Blaze battered at his foe, pushing it toward the water until it was obliged to turn 90 degrees and break into a gallop in an attempt to peel away from the banks. As soon as it pivoted, Blaze flicked his sword at its backside. The netherial blade bit into the monster's tail, sending small bones flying in all directions. The animal arched its back and tumbled into its component bones. Nether flowed away and vanished into nothing.
"As usual," Blaze said. When all else fails, stab them in the ass.
Up the slope, Gladik had already reduced one of the beasts into a mangled heap that was currently dragging itself away through the crooked white pillars. The priest sent a savage blast of nether toward the remaining creature's tail, followed right after by a strike of ether. The twin forces pummeled into the animal's hindquarters and blasted the beast apart. Dante jogged after his opponent, giving Blaze the chance to catch up. The construct stared at them with its eyeless pits, then turned around and scampered up the hillside as fast as it could. Dante sheathed his sword and ran back to Naren. The captain lay on his back, blood streaming from deep slashes that ran from his chest to his gut. His breathing was rapid and shallow, blood leaking from the corners of his mouth. He blinked continuously. Wary of depleting even another drop of his own trace, Dante reached for the ether. A pinprick of light appeared on his finger, then faded slowly to nothing, like a ship's lantern carried off into the night. He'd spent all of it earlier, too.
Naren! Blaze flung himself down beside the captain, grabbing her shoulder. You're going to be all right. Do you hear me?
Naren rolled his eyes to take in Blaze. A cold shudder ran down Dante's body. He grabbed at the nether around him, trying to force some last shreds to his command, but it slipped from his grasp like mist. Vola ran up beside them, teary-eyed. Gladik walked along in her wake. The priest gazed down on the dying man, as if deciding which slice of beef to toss into the pan. He braced his hand on his thigh and lowered himself to his knees. A halo of clear light coalesced around his hands. The glow stretched into beams, shaping a cage of light around Naren's body. The cage contracted around the captain's chest wound, filling the gashes with a substance like sunshine reflecting from calm water. The ether dimmed to a translucent, gelatinous state. The gashes grew opaque, vague hints of striation within them, then coalesced into ghostly muscle and skin. The outer layers hardened until the organs and bones beneath them were little more than murky shapes. After another moment, his skin was unbroken beneath the long slashes cut through his jabat. Naren coughed, spewing blood. He inhaled with a long gasp, then bucked upright, slapping his palms on the stony ground.
He will live, Gladik declared. We should go.
Dante and Blaze pulled Naren to his feet. Gladik walked to the canoe and settled in its rear. Volo untied its lines and produced a pair of paddles. Bracing the shaky captain's arms over their shoulders, Dante and Blaze helped him totter to the canoe and climb inside. They followed him in and shoved off, Volo taking the lead, Blaze paddling behind her.
How did you know to strike them in the tails? Gladik asked, his voice barely more than a monotone.
They were composed of several different animals, Dante said. That shouldn't have been possible. Not unless some higher magic was holding them together.
When I saw a vertebra where it shouldn't be, that made me think of traces.
Traces?
The deep nether, left behind by death. It's housed in the spine.
I figured the Lich might have found some way to mix up multiple skeletons and fuse them together using their traces, but their spines looked to be from a single animal.
But the tails weren't. They were all jumbled up.
Cunningly wrought. In seeking to destroy them, one would seek the head, the neck, perhaps the ribcage. The tail, however, would be the last place one would think to strike.
Fascinating, Blaze said. Now that you've cracked this mystery, how about you two geniuses put your big brains toward getting us away from this hideous place that keeps trying to kill us?
Volo consulted with Gladik regarding their current location, and the closest alternative that might not be so full of the Aedan Rane's horrors. No matter how hard they paddled, the white bulge of the wound loomed behind them, ruling over the top of the pale, ghastly trees, as if it meant to follow them to the ends of the earth. 2.
There's nothing on me, is there?
Blaze turned in a half circle, tugging at his tunic for a better look at his back.
No spiders? Or ticks? Or spider ticks that can build webs inside you and suck your organs dry like flies?
Dante eyed him.
Why would you be worried about parasites? Everything in this place is dead.
First of all, it's always a good time to be worried about parasites. Second, we just escaped from a guy who murdered several Andrak like they were mice in his pantry, while assailing us with hundreds of not zombies. Then he capped off the day by harrying us with skeletal monsters whose existence you thought to be impossible until the moment they started clawing you to bits. Forgive me for being concerned the Lich might have planted something smaller on us.
There are no vermin on you.
I'm more worried about there being vermin in me. You use nasty things to spy on people all the time. You think that bastard can't do the same?
Suddenly alarmed, Dante tucked into the nether, running a quick check of the shadows within Blaze, to confirm he wasn't harboring anything alien. When nothing showed up in Blaze, Dante made a quick pass of the others and their surroundings on the small island, where they'd finally tucked in after hours of paddling through the swamp.
I don't see anything.
Dante raised an eyebrow at Gladig.
Do you?
The priest shook his head.
Nothing.
Then we're free of him, Blaze said. So that means I'm safe to shout as loudly as I can. Why are we still traveling with someone who tried to slaughter the entire Colin Basin?
His words hung and died in the still, damp air. Stiff and sore from the day's exertions, Dante seated himself on a white rock.
You just saw why.
Because something strange and disturbing just came out of nowhere to muck up our plans. What else is new?
We've never seen anything like this before. We can't throw away our resources just because we don't like how they smell.
Resources? Is that your new word for bloodthirsty maniac? Have you forgotten the cave in Colin? The one we found after we drove him out of the city?
I never will, Dante said softly. But we're the ones who stopped him and the Drakebane from destroying the White Lich. I'm afraid that if we don't learn what this thing is, and what it intends to do, what we saw in the cavern will be seen all across this land.
Blaze stared at him, then spread his arms at Neren.
Surely you don't think this is a good idea?
Neren seated himself on the ground. His face, normally a glowingly sun-burnished brown, was still ashen from the encounter with the Lich's scouts.
I hate him like I hate hell. But I wouldn't be poised to offer you an opinion if he hadn't healed me this very day. Right. So, one life saved, a few tens of thousands to go.
Dante ran his hands through his tangled hair.
The rulers of Tanar Atain were so terrified of this thing that the Drakebane's family spent decades organizing a takeover of Malun in case they had to run from it.
Volo, your friends in the Righteous Monsoon meant to use the White Lich to overthrow the Drakebane. Did they understand exactly what they were unleashing?
The girl darted a look at him, her dark Tanarian eyes haunted and burning, then stared out into the swamp.
They told us the Aedan Rane was the only thing that had ever beaten the Knights of Odor Sain, that he'd protect us with one hand and smash the Drakebane with the other. But some of the others, those who came from the outer swamps, they said the Aedan Rane was a monster, that he'd devour us, too.
We laughed at them. But we were wrong.
Blaze scoffed. How do you know that? Because he was trying to kill us? Did you forget the part where Gladik and his pals had been trying to murder the Lich with Star Eaters? Maybe he was pissed off and mistook us for his enemies.
No, Gladik said. He will take this land. He will kill those who live here, or turn them into the blighted, the half-mad people who hide in the water. And once the swamps are his, he will devour one land after another, just as he attempted to do an age ago. That is what we were fighting to stop.
And congratulations on the bang-up job. Even if you're telling the truth, and for once in your miserable life you're trying to do the right thing, do you really think that undoes everything else you've done?
Do you believe I follow the Drakebane into battle at the wound because I sought redemption?
Gladik laughed raspily, full of bitter mirth.
Why would I want redemption when I had only ever done that which was holy?
Blazer's hand curled into a fist. Tell that to the colonists. The priest grimaced, his face going dark.
I have failed to stop the Aiden Rani. I have been betrayed by the Drakebane. I have seen my beloved city swallowed by his insurrection. Everything I have fought for has been a lie, and everything I held has been lost. But none of this is a more wretched torture than your self-righteous harangues. Choose what to do with me and be damned.
He's right, Dante said. Time to choose. You can kill him now, or we can use his knowledge and abilities to see if we can stop what's been unleashed on the swamp. It's your call. Blaze scrunched his blonde eyebrows together.
You're serious? This is my decision.
Yours and Naren's.
This is one of your ploys. A clever way to pressure me to give in so you can feel like we all agree to it, keeping your conscience clean.
Okay, then I'll decide. Blaze swore and turned to Naren.
Just say the word. I want nothing more than revenge.
Face downcast, Naren closed his eyes. But then I think about the joy that lit up Captain Twill's face whenever we came to a new port. She loved seeing new places. The stranger the better. I think she would have liked Tanara Tain very much. If what Gladik says is true, that this land is under siege, Twill would not have wanted to see it destroyed in her name.
He placed his hand on the ground, as if needing to steady himself. Blaze worked his jaw, looking ready to spit. In a violent lunge, he picked up a rock bigger than his head. He screamed, the muscles of his arms bulging, and shot-putted the rock into the water with a titanic splash.
He took three deep breaths, shoulders heaving, then turned around, face perfectly calm.
Very well. We've reached a consensus. Gladik, if you'd be so kind as to brief us as to the Aiden Rane situation.
The priest regarded Blaze quizzically, then made a thoughtful noise. He paced deliberately about the small and mostly bare island.
There are many stories regarding the Aiden Rane. As with all such situations, most of these stories are rife with superstition and groaning with ignorance. Strip these falsehoods away, and we are left with certain stark truths. The White Lich was a great sorcerer. Drunk on his own arrogance, he crossed a line he wasn't meant to cross. And for all the vast power this granted him, surely the gods cursed him, or...
Gladik stopped pacing.
He stared into the bare white trees, as if he were listening for a distant whistle. He muttered to himself, then shook his head hard.
Ignore what I, in my arrogance, have declared as fact, he said. I was not there to see these events myself. So how may I claim perfect wisdom over what was and what wasn't?
He smiled sneeringly. This seemed to be aimed at himself, then made to fold his arms. Seeing the stump of his right elbow, he blinked in surprise. Still looking at the wound, which he'd smoothed over with ether, he went on.
Three different stories are commonly told of the White Lich. The first is the story told in the court of the Drakebane. The court's priests and historians tell that the Aedan Rane began his existence as a sorcerer named Baed, in the ancient capital of Godo-Hadain. Baed soon acquitted himself as perhaps the most powerful talent of his generation, yet, due to a renegade quality within his nature, he often found himself in opposition to the Emperor's politics. As a consequence of his intransigence, some of which, the history claims, amounted to a hair's breadth from treason, when it came time for promotions and honours, Baed was regularly neglected, attaining a station equivalent to the head priest of a small chapel. In time, the Emperor fell sick. The disease was unknown. None of his sorcerers could diagnose its cause nor cure its effects. Day by day, he wasted away from the vile corruption within his veins. In desperation, he summoned Baed to him and made a vow. If Baed could cure his sickness, the Emperor would make him high priest of the land. Baed bent his powers to the task, yet was unable to reverse the disease. He ventured into the deep swamps to meditate. In the darkest night, a ball of light appeared from the trees. It whispered to him, with promises of its own. The light of life could save the Emperor. It beckoned him onward, warning him that the swamps ahead were full of demons. Just as the light had foretold, the demons assailed Baed from all sides, but with each attack, he turned them back with the might of his sorcery. Mile on mile they ventured into the wilds. At last, the light stopped before a cavern. Baed entered. Within, he found another light of such purity that his eyes overflowed with tears. So holy was its glow that he nearly turned back, believing he was too mean a creature to touch it. Yet he picked it up and departed the cave. The being that had guided him to the cavern praised him for his strength and bravery, then worried aloud that the light within would be wasted on a dying old man rather than a sorcerer of such grandeur. For whoever received the light would spend eternity with it. Hearing these words, Baed remembered all of the times he had been overlooked, and he used the light upon himself. When he returned to Godo-Hadain, he came to the Emperor, making many false efforts to cure him. The Emperor soon died. And that is when Baed revealed the power the light had imbued him with. He seized Godo-Hadain, then the Empire. For years he ruled with an iron fist. His power was untouchable. It was during this time that his enemies, working in secret, created the Odosein, the only force capable of neutralizing Baed's great power. When they were ready, they marched on Baed's redoubt. Yet even they could not destroy him. They could only seal him within the Rialace, the iron prison. And there it was that,
just as the glowing guide had promised him. Bade would spend eternity with his forbidden light.
Gladig fell silent. Dante's eyebrows were lifted so high they felt in danger of disappearing up his scalp.
Does that remind you of anything?
Gladig smiled wryly.
A garbled version of your northern heresy.
You mean the heresy your entire faith is founded on?
A heresy which our faith corrects while yours, unable to cope with the betrayal of your dark lord, continues to worship a devil as your first god.
Will you two shut up and tell us what this means?
Blaze said.
Aron had a forbidden light of his own, Dante said. But instead of keeping it from the lowly humans, like the other gods wanted, he smuggled it to Carvajal, his half-brother, to bring down to Earth and kindle the fire for humanity. But in his vanity, Carvajal locked Aron away in the starry vault, so he'd get all the credit for himself.
So what are you saying? The Tanarians are filthy plagiarists?
Exactly. If so, I don't think much of this story can be true. Most likely it's propaganda ginned up by the Drakebane dynasty to cover their own crimes by dressing them up in the legitimacy of our faith.
There is another option, Gladig said. Perhaps our faiths are stolen from them.
Ha ha.
You position yourself as such a liberal truth seeker. Yet you reject out of hand the possibility your chosen faith might not be the oldest.
Dante drew himself up.
How long ago did Bade rule?
The history places the date 800 years in the past.
Then we know our stories are older. In the lands of Wesley, their faith is also a branch of Narashtaviks, and they've been cut off from us for 1,000 years.
Gladig waved his intact hand.
I would not place so much importance on the date in the Tanarian story. It is almost surely false. Their lords have outlawed writing among the commoners, so that they might have control of their history, which they see as a tool to be altered whenever it will support their present needs.
Blazer's mouth fell open.
Well, that violates everything I believe in.
It is very brave of you to denounce the ruler's policies, when none of its supporters are here to hear you. However, the Drakebane's lineage does not exert such measures for the sake of mere power. They do so in order to throw down the Aedan Rane whenever he manifests.
He's just popping up all the time, is he?
Then what's the big deal this time? The Drakebane dynasty has dedicated itself, and in many ways, all of Tanar Etain, to keeping the White Lich contained. That is why the Emperor maintains the Odosein. That is why he places such demands and taxes on his subjects. That is why all of the country is trained to think of itself as a singular body, with each person belonging to a specific part, where it is their responsibility to execute specific duties. In normal times, Gladig continued, the Drakebane's knights keep close watch on the tomb and the lands that surround it. Whenever the Aedan Rane stirs, he is met with a vast host, and is neutralized before he can muster but a portion of his awful strength. This time, however, the rebels undermined us, assisting him so that he might emerge ahead of schedule. The desperation of our situation can be seen in the fact that rather than gathering his forces to try to reclaim the capital, the Drakebane struck here instead, meaning to spend the last of his strength attempting to return the Aedan Rane to his vault.
Blaze pursed his lips.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but our friend Dante here spends more time reading than he does breathing.
If there's been a world-saving battle against the White Lich, and it's been going on for centuries, why hasn't he ever heard of it?
For the same reason that so little else is known of Tanar Etain. Such information is not allowed to pass beyond the borders.
Gladik waited for more questions. When none came, he resumed pacing.
If the first story I have told you is the province of the Drakebanes, you will feel no surprise to learn that those among the righteous monsoon tell a different story. Long ago, when time was fluid, and the weights of justice bobbed like seeds on the tide, people lived in splintered tribes. Life was war, and war was life. Suffering was one's second skin. Silver, yes, even gold, flowed from the mines like glittering wine. But rather than passing to those who were good, who would use it to feed those who hungered and heal those who fell ill, it was hoarded by kings and tyrants who spent it on axes and pikes, raising more armies to prosecute more wars. And so, suffering became a god in itself. In their desperation, the people prayed to the gods, sacrificing what little they had, in vain hope of relief. The gods made sport of their strife. If ever they intervened, it was only to prevent the mortals from giving up all hope and lying down in despair. Yet, Unu, Mother of Islands, grew wrathful at her peers' contempt for their mortal toys. She came before Endek, the swamp wizard, and she breathed the mists of the morning into his lungs, and poured the light of the righteous into his ears. Then Endek doubled in height. Then Endek's powers grew sixtyfold, and Unu sent Endek forth into the mortal lands. He slew the kings, butchered the tyrants, blasted with fire the mercenaries who robbed and raped the weak. None could so much as scratch his skin. Within a year and a day, the land had been purged and lay at peace. Those who hungered were given food. Those who wasted of illness were given medicine. All stood equal before the measures. They shed the skin of suffering. In time, their peace was so complete, they quit their tasks to lounge in freedom. Time itself mattered not. They quit their hourglasses and calendars. And then, at last, secure in their golden age, they quit their sacrifices, their offerings, their prayers. An outcry grew among the gods. Not only had they lost the sport of watching the people suffer, but they had lost all love and duty from their worshippers. Coming together, they assembled a great host and descended on Endek, champion of Unu. They battled him from the coast to the darkest marsh, from the northern hills to the southern rift. So great was Endek's sorcery that even the combined might of the gods couldn't destroy him, but they could imprison him. Hence they sheathed him in cold iron, inscribing the words of their curses upon the faces of his prison, such that his strength was made nothing. With Endek gone, some who had lived in his peace fell into corruption, pillaging their neighbors. Pillaging became conquering, and then the clash of armies. Within a year minus a day, the land had fallen back into darkness and strife, and people again suffocated within their suffering. For all of the centuries, whenever Endek the Aedan Rane has attempted to escape his bonds,
He has been beaten back.
Yet among the righteous Monsoon, it is told that if he can be released for good, he will restore them to their golden age.
Gladik bowed his head to Volo.
Do I represent your faith fairly?
That's what they told us, Volo said. But they never said nothing about the way he looks at you. Like you're just a crop for his harvest.
So the Aedan Rane were sent by the only good god to usher in a golden age of perfect peace, Dante said.
That sounds even more like propaganda than the Drakebane's version.
Gladik gave a small shrug.
At one time, I thought the same.
But not anymore.
After the treason I've witnessed on this day, I believe all might be lies.
There's one place the stories are in accordance, Naren said. In both cases, the Lich's power has come from a source of light.
The natural assumption is that this refers to the ether.
Gladik adjusted his grey robes, which had been soiled with blood and dirt during the fighting and escape.
The final story of the Aedan Rane's origin is not told in any courts. In fact, it in itself has many different versions, but each one repeats the same common themes. That long ago, a sorcerer and his wife lived with their children at the edge of the known swamp. One day, the sorcerer's wife fell ill. Over the following days, their children did as well. Though well-versed in the healing arts, the sorcerer could do nothing to reverse their worsening condition. In fear for their lives, he passed into the unknown swamp. There he sold his soul for the power to save his wife and children. Yet, when he returned to his house, all of his family had perished. Their deaths, in conjunction with the deal he struck, drove him mad. Over the next few years, children started to go missing from the villages in the hills. The village elders warned the bereaved parents to leave the matter be. In time, however, their grief proved too much. They assembled a war band and hastened into the swamps, following a trail left by the most recent of the vanished children, a trail that led them directly to the sorcerer's home. There, they found their children had been turned into pale, vicious demons. In their horror, the villagers slew the changed youths, then burned down the sorcerer's abode. This goaded the sorcerer and his demons into laying waste to the hills. The villagers had sorcerers of their own, however, and quickly a hellacious battle ensued. Yet the hill people could never destroy the sorcerer, for in the bargain he had struck in the swamp, he had been given a new body, and left his old form with the demon with whom he'd done his deal. Unless the old body was destroyed, the white lich could never die. Hill by hill, the people were pushed back. At last, with no hope of defeating the white lich, they enacted the only plan that could stop him from poisoning the whole world. They destroyed their own lands, slagging them into a melted and poisonous miasma through which not even the Aedan Rane could cross. Later, the lich was imprisoned, yet the hills remained forever tainted.
Dante scratched the side of his jaw. You're talking about the hell-painted hills. But that's not the story the Allobalgians tell. They say the hills were invaded by a plague of enormous pale locusts.
Gladik favored him with a disdainful look.
Where did you encounter such a version? The High Courts of Kavanna?
Lady Vita of Aseda. She's educated and well-travelled.
That is precisely your problem. On such matters you cannot trust the tales of the nobility.